Welcome back to the last session of entrepreneurial strategy. Okay, so far we have discussed about the general concept of the strategy, and also you practiced, you know, in strategy campers. You know, I'm pretty sure that, you know, those really helpful for you, right? And right now, you know, I'm gonna apply this general concept of the strategy into the startup field. So, in this session, we are gonna talk about the strategy as a simple rule, okay? So, I already explained that. What is a strategy? So, the strategy is company's theory about where to play and how to win, okay? But the more important thing in the startup field, then we need to understand the concept of the simple rule. So in this session, I want to introduce the concept of strategy as a simple rule. So scholars in the field of entrepreneurship suggest this concept, and they argue that when business becomes complex, strategy should be simple. Think about the startup situation. You know, you don't have money, you don't have knowledge, you don't have experience, you don't have people, but you try to solve the unmet, you know, opportunity. You try to target unknown people. You try to solve the, you know, uncertainty, something like that, right? So your situation is pretty complicated. But think about although your situation is complex, your strategy should be very simple. Okay, looks like a very simple advice, looks like a very simple principle, looks like a very simple, you know, guideline. If we have a very simple and reliable guideline, reliable advice, then it will be very helpful for you to make a great decision. You know, then you use a few simple rules, right? And this simple rule enable you guys to stay agile and help you get the opportunity much faster than anybody else. Okay, remember, strategy as a simple rule. Your strategy doesn't have to be complicated. Okay, if you have a complicated strategy, it is useless. Okay, it is meaningless. Your strategy should be simple, you know, just one or two, okay? And there are different types of, you know, simple rules. The first one is, you know, how-to rule. Second one is boundary rules. Third one is priority rules. And fourth one is timing rule. And the last one is exit rule. So the scholars suggest those five types of, you know, simple rules. Okay, let's look at line by line. The first, you know, how-to rule. You know, how to rule define the key features of how process are executed. You know, for example, you know, what makes our process unique? So I want to give you an example of the how to rule. This is a Best Buy. You know, many years ago, Amazon.com attacked, you know, Best Buy throughout their strategy. You know, so the Best Buy became the victim of showrooming. You know, you already understand this story from your card news before this entire session. Anyway, so the Best Buy, what did they do? They adopted, you know, Geek Squad. Okay, Geek Squad. Geek Squad is the Best Buy in-house tech support team and installation team. And this Geek Squad play a critical role in helping, you know, Best Buy compete with Amazon.com. Okay, so when you got attacked from your enemy, you need to think about how to avoid this situation. Okay, so this is a how-to rule. Okay, remember, it's a how-to rule. It's a very simple rule. Okay. What about second rule, which is the boundary rule? Boundary rule means you should set the limit on what kind of opportunities to pursue. Think about there are a bunch of different types of opportunity. Then you cannot pursue all of them. You just focus on your area. Okay, this is the boundary rule. I want to give you an example from the Cisco. You know the Cisco. Cisco is the, once fast growing company in the world. You know, the main product of Cisco was kind of connecting devices. Without Cisco's product, you know, we cannot access the internet right now. And then in early day of the Cisco, Cisco faced a tremendous challenge, you know, from the market. So that's why Cisco had to develop the new types of technology, which is the switch technology. But Cisco realized that they were already late in this, the new types of technology. So that's why they changed their mind from, you know, developing in-house about the new technology to acquiring existing company that already produced these types of product. Okay, switch product. So that's why Cisco decided to engage in M&A activities with, you know, relatively small company. But you know, interesting is at that time, Cisco followed the boundary rule. They set the limit about what kind of company should we engage in as a M&A activities. They list down the potential the target company. So the potential target company should have less than 75 employees and, you know, kind of, you know, engineering driven company. And also the culture should be fit very well with the Cisco and geographically very close and just 1 hour driving close, you know, company. So they list out those kind of criteria and then they try to find out the company that meet those criteria. This is one of the examples of boundary rule. Without any boundary rule, then, you know, you cannot do anything, right? So setting up the boundary is very important. Okay, third rule is priority rule. So what is the priority? Priority is kind of a ranking order of your task. Okay, think about as a startup, you have a lot of tasks to do, but you cannot do at the same time. You know, you make a rank order of your task, okay? Which one is the top priority? Which one is the second priority? Something like that. Okay, so your daily activities or your business activities is based on your priority. For example, okay, look at the Intel, you know, when Intel allocated manufacturing, their decisions was based on grocery margin. It means that, you know, they allocate a lot of work, you know, at the area where they can make a lot of money. Okay, which is pretty simple. Okay, so again, your business activities should be based on your priority. This is a priority rules. Let's move on. Timing rules. Okay. Timing rule coordinate the rhythm and speed of the action. Let's go back to the case of the Cisco again. You know, again, the Cisco tried to develop the new technology, which is a switch. Then, you know, again, they tried to develop this technology in-house first. But at the time, they realized that, you know, we are already late. So then the CEO make a big decision. If we don't have resources to develop the component or product within 6 months, then we say it is already late. Then we need to proceed to next option. If we cannot develop within 6 months, next option would be we will purchase, you know, existing companies in order to meet the consumer need. Okay. This is the timing rule. Okay, last but not least is exit rule. You know, exit rule is about, you know, kind of a giving up the rule. You know, when to give up and what to give up and how to give up, something like that. You know, many times we do not think about this exit rule, but it is very critical, okay? This is a company that produces a hearing aid. And inside this company, there are a lot of projects. And then this company has a very unique exit rule, right? Your project will be shutting down if your key members leave the project. Wow, it is pretty simple and there is a very clear message when to exit, okay? When to exit, when to give up. Think about your startup journey. Probably you try to make something valuable product or service, okay? But you cannot pursue this idea, you know, forever and for a long time without any performance. Okay, so in order to keep going, you'd better, you should have some kind of relevant performance. So in this case, you should have the exit rule, you know, when to give up this project or how to give up this project and what to give up. Okay, for example, if you do not attract 1,000 consumers within 3 months, then we will pivot this service or product and we target to another idea. Something like that. This is kind of a good example of exit rule. Okay. So far we have discussed about strategy as a simple rules. Okay. And remember, there are 5 different types of simple rules. And this simple rule concept is very important. Okay. So the concept of this simple rule is very important, you know, considering the dilemmatic situation. What is a dilemmatic situation? You know, dilemma refers to a situation in which a difficult choice has to be made between 2 different things you could do. Okay, you can do A and also you can do B, but right now you should make a decision. Which one? Which one is the path that you pursue? Okay, as a startup, you know, you can meet many dilemmatic situations. So in this case, you know, I will introduce 3 frequently met dilemmatic situations for startups. Okay. Although there are many dilemmatic situations. Okay, first one, it is a funding dilemma. Okay, the dilemmatic question would be, should we take VC funding or bootstrap the businesses? Okay, what do you mean by the bootstrapping the businesses? Bootstrapping businesses, you just run the businesses without, you know, the external funding. Okay, you do everything by yourself with your money or with your friend's money, something like that. Okay, so the core issue about this, you know, is that the VC, venture capital company, brings the speed and capital, but it will lead to the dilution of your equity and the pressure about the performance. On the other hand, bootstrapping offers the incredible control power for you, but, you know, slower growth, right? Okay, this is the funding dilemma. You can do either one, but you need to choose one of them. Okay. Okay. Second dilemmatic situation is about outsourcing. You know, outsource versus in-house. You know, dilemmatic question in this case is, you know, should we build the technology in-house or outsource development, or should we sell our product service by ourselves or outsource it? Okay, core issue in this dilemmatic situation is that in-house development, in-house sales ensure incredible control and you can protect your property, but it is time consuming. On the other hand, outsourcing is faster but riskier. Okay, you see the difference, you know, different benefit and you know, different disadvantages, right? Okay, let's look at the third dilemmatic situation. Profit first or growth first? The critical question would be, should we target the early profit or should we focus on, you know, growth first? That is the critical question. Core issue in this case, early profitability lower your risk, but early growth first, you know, increase network effect. You know, in the digital area, you know, in the digital area, creating network effect is very important for you, right? Okay. So anyway, there's a pros and cons, but you need to choose one of them. This is a kind of a dilemmatic situations. Let's begin with the funding dilemma. Okay, let's look at the paper. You know, in 1984, Mayers and Mazurov, you know, published this interesting paper. You know, they argued that in reality, there is an information asymmetry between two parties and transaction cost exists. So when they analyzed many big companies, they found that the companies raised the outside funding or inside funding in the following orders. You know, they raised just internal fund first, and then they got the debt after that. Then later, they raised the outside equity financing. You know, equity financing is the kind of a last step. Okay, this is called as, you know, the pecking order theory. Pecking order theory argued that, again, the companies follow the financing orders. Okay? So there's another the research that applied pecking order theory into the startup. And the researchers interviewed 20 Scottish, you know, startups. And then they conclude that startups also, you know, also prioritize the internal funding first. Okay, they follow the internal funding first, and then they later pursue additional, you know, funding source. You know, different thing is, you know, they often cannot access the debt, okay, because, you know, the bank do not like, you know, startup. So the bank do not, you know, lend the money to the startup. So that's why the startup cannot access the debt. So they move directly to the equity funding, you know, after the internal financing. Okay, this is the difference between startup and big company. So the pecking order theory does not apply in this area. However, you know, early equity financing is often kind of a strategic movement for the startup. You know, what do you mean by that? You know, although startup cannot access the bank, so they move to the, you know, external equity financing. But, you know, when they, you know, increase, when they raise the outside funding, then they try to find out the great mentors at the same time. So, in other words, they want to get the money from the great mentors. Okay? So why? Because great mentors can increase the company's value. Because mentors have a friend, mentors have knowledge, mentors have experience. So that's why startup want to partner with them. Okay? Let's look at the graph. You know, there are 20 cases. And then, you know, one means just the first step. You know, when they get the money, all 20 startups approach the internal financing. Internal financing means they use their own money. It's the owner's money. And then what about the second step? You know, from the large company, from the pecking order theory, large company probably go to the bank in order to get the debt. But the startups, you know, different case. So the startups, you know, went to the angel investor first. Why angel investors? Because the angel investors are good mentors. Okay. So that's why, you know, so many startups went to the angel investor first. How many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 12 out of 20 company went to the angel investors first. Okay. And what about the others? You know, some of them went to the bank, luckily, and some of them got the grant. Some of them, you know, goes to the family members. Okay, anyway, this is a kind of a pecking order theory. So, what has to do with pecking order theory with the funding dilemma? You know, we can apply the pecking order hypothesis in your startup financing, you know, the dilemmatic situation. The first, you need to expand the internal fundings. Okay, you focused on internal funding. Then you can seek the debt financing. Okay, so please reinvent your earning and you engage in bootstrapping and you try to get the grant outside and you rely on loan guarantee program, you know, supported by the government. Okay, these are all activities about expanding your internal funding. Second, angel investment in the seed stage is very important, okay? Because it is kind of a second step for you as a startup. So, but in this case, your equity, you know, I mean, equity share for the angel investors is less than 10%, and you'd better find out, you know, good mentors as angel investors. You know, you can secure good angels. You know, securing good angel is a strategy for increasing your company values. Okay, so, you know, when you pursue outside funding, your movement should be strategic. Okay? And also, you'd better reduce asymmetry, information asymmetry between you and the investors. If there is a huge gap between you and investors in terms of the information, then, you know, angel investors try to, angel investors or other outside investors want to get more equity because they need some premium because they don't have much information for you. So that's why they want to protect themselves. You know, we want to avoid this kind of situation. Okay. So that's why we want to, put the effort to reduce some information gap between you and the investors. How? You build trust with investors and you recruit experts and you establish some kind of, board of directors. Okay. Those activities can reduce the information gap between you and your investors. Then you can get great negotiation power between you and your investors. Okay, this is how to avoid a funding dilemma. You know, I hope that this is helpful for you to understand the dilemmatic situation in terms of funding. Let's move on to second dilemmatic situation, which is outsource versus in-house development. Look at this picture. Okay, this picture is, you know, the medical devices, right? And this medical device is called, you know, CT, right? Okay, have you heard about the EMI? EMI is a music company, British music company. But the EMI, British music company, developed it, you know, world first commercial CT scanner in the, you know, early 1970s. Did you know that? Wow, you know, they developed, you know, music company developed it, you know, advanced, you know, medical devices, which is a CT. Wow, it's very interesting. But the problem was EMI didn't have any knowledge about hospital, any knowledge about, you know, medical devices. They don't have any experience, infrastructure, and strategy to sell medical devices at hospital. Okay? Because they don't know this field. So that's why they faced the kind of a dilemmatic situation about outsource versus in-house in terms of the sales and service or installation. Again, although they developed this technology, they don't have any experience, knowledge about sales, service, and installation. Okay? This is a dilemmatic situation. Should EMI developed their ability in-house or they outsourced this capability the other side, right? So EMI made a decision to outsource sales and distribution of their CT scanners to third-party company. Okay, in other words, EMI will make a CT scanners in their factory, and then, you know, they will contract with third-party, you know, company that distributed the product. So the third-party company will sell the CT scanner produced by EMI to the hospitals. Okay? And this is the process. Then what happened? You know, when the third-party company distributed the CT scanner to the many hospitals, and this news spread out very quickly. Then later, GE, which is one of the strong, you know, competitor in the medical devices area, and Siemens, another strong competitor in the medical devices area, you know, heard about this news. And then they quickly developed the faster and much better, you know, CT scanners. Okay? So, you know, there could be strong competitors immediately. Then later, what happened? You know, GE and Siemens integrated their manufacturing and sales and service together because they had experience, they had the knowledge about the hospital and medical devices. Okay, so they had the previous network. Okay, so they integrate those knowledge, the capability together. Then what happened? You know, of course, EMI lost market leadership, but the GE and Siemens dominated this market. Why? Because the consumer like to have a GE and Siemens CT scan. Why? Because they need to get the service right away if there is something problem. But if they got the EMI CT scanner, then they should talk with the third party distributor first, and then third party distributors talk with, you know, EMI, and EMI, you know, made the decision what to do. Then, you know, the back and forth, that it will take tons of time. So that's why, you know, consumers, you know, didn't like it. So the GE and Siemens dominated this market. In this case, you know, what would have done by you know, the EMI? You know, EMI should have developed those kind of capabilities, you know, in-house, you know, in order to protect their properties, okay, protect their secret. Okay, let's move on. There are several criteria, you know, about the dilemmatic question of outsource versus in-house. Okay, let's look at the first criteria, cost. Okay, the first question to ask is, will outsourcing reduce cost without sacrificing your quality? You know, in many cases, startups operate with a limited budget. So that if outsourcing to a third party can deliver the same or even better quality at a low prices, then it may be a smart move, right? So again, you can outsource only if saving exceed in-house cost, okay? Well, in this case, EMI can save the money when they contract with the third party. You know, in terms of the money, in terms of cash, yes, they can save the cost. But if we consider the consumer's satisfaction, then, you know, they lost many things, right? So we need to consider those hidden factors as well. Okay, second criteria is a strategic value. Okay, you ask yourself, is this task critical to our competitive advantage or not? You know, if the task is core, you know, to your businesses, then what do you want to do? You may want to keep it in-house, okay? If your task is, you know, non-core, then you can outsource it. So the outsource is possible only if your task is non-core. Okay, let's go back to the CT case. You know, when you install, you know, CT scanner in the hospital, probably the consumer service and maintenance and the feedback, those are all very critical tasks for your CT scanners. Okay, so these tasks are not non-core tasks. These tasks are core tasks. So you should not outsource your the service sales and, you know, the consumer satisfaction. Okay, so the EMI's decision was wrong in terms of the strategy value. Okay, let's move on another criteria, expertise, you know, gap. You know, you ask yourself, do we lack the skills or, you know, technology internally? Okay, startups cannot be good at everything, right? If another vendors or another third party company have a superior knowledge and better tools or specialized technology, It might be more efficient to outsource. Okay, so, you know, outsource is available, you know, if your third party company can offer superior capability than anybody else. You know, think about the EMI, you know, CT scanners. You know, although the third party distributors can have some kind of sales capability or service capabilities, but their capabilities not as great. As GE and Siemens, okay? So that's why in terms of expertise gap, you know, the EMI should not be outsourcing the sales and service. Okay. Let's move on. The last one, in the last criteria, which is the risk. And you ask yourself, can we manage the potential risk? You know, in this case, the potential risk would be your technology leaked. Okay. The risk is often the deal breaker, right? Even if outsourcing is cheaper, you must evaluate, you know, whether sensitive data or your property or your technology or reputation might be exposed, right? If your technology exposed, and if your secret leaked, and if your data, you know, stolen, then you should not, you know, outsource your, you know, activities, right? So the outsource is available only there are minimal risk. Okay, minimal risk. Okay, what do you think? Is it helpful for you to understand about, you know, outsource versus in-house, you know, the dilemmatic situation? Okay, let's move on to the last, you know, dilemmatic situation, which is profit first versus growth first. Let's look at the eBay. You know, eBay started small at home, and then the founder, Pierre Omidyar, started this eBay as his hobby. You know, at that time he had a daily job, and then he managed his hobby website at night. And then only way to access eBay at that time to write the check. And then consumers send out the check to the Pierre's home. And then the Pierre's should handle with this check at night after work, okay? So anyways, the Pierre Omidyar never give up the profit, never give up money, okay? So the eBay was based on profit first strategy. So good thing is eBay always profitable, okay, and successful. So 1 year later, eBay was very successful, and within a short period of time, eBay went to IPO. Okay, this is the power of a profit first strategy. And what about growth first strategy? Okay, let's look at the Amazon.com. You know, Amazon started in 1994. After then, you know, within 8 years, Amazon didn't make any money because Amazon reinvested much on their operations. Amazon never saved money and never pursued the profit. And they just focused on the growth. Why? Because Amazon needed some kind of consumers. And only focus is to attracting new consumers. Okay, so they focused on market share. What about the result of the Amazon.com? You know, right now, Amazon.com is the world top e-commerce company. So the growth first strategy worked very well, right? So the either one fine. But your problem is, okay, which one? Which one is my strategy? This is kind of a dilemmatic situation. So I want to introduce some of the relevant research in terms of the profit first versus, you know, growth first dilemmatic situation. Okay, look at him. His name is Dr. Davidson, and he is a well-known professor in the field of entrepreneurship. And luckily, I took his class when I was a PhD student. Okay, and he published a lot of paper, and he's an economist. And many years ago, he studied about the better strategy. Which one is better strategy for early startup? Profit or growth? Wow, you know, his research topic is fit very well our, you know, dilemmatic situation. You know, to solve this question, he analyzed 3,500, you know, Australian small companies during 1995, 1998. And he analyzed 1,470 Swedish small companies during 1997 and 2000. Okay. Then what about the result? Result was very interesting. You know, the result showed that the companies that focused on profit from the beginning ultimately became high growth ventures and high profit company. Wow, it's a surprise, right? Okay, if you are a startup, then you'd be focused on profit first, like eBay. Okay, do not focus on growth. You know, if we focus on the growth at first, then it will be very dangerous. What about Amazon.com? You know, Amazon.com is successful. Yes, Amazon.com is successful, but it is exception. You know what I mean? So on average from his research, on average, you know, focusing on the profit first from the beginning would be the better strategy for you on average, although there is some exception, right? Wow, it's a very interesting guideline. So many people, you know, think about, is it true, right? Is it true? So, you know, one of the scholars in France decided to replicate, you know, Dr. Davidson's study. So they replicated the research of Davidson et al. 2009, you know, previous study. And they analyzed, you know, how many 664,000 European small company representing 40% of all the European small company during 2011 to 2019. What about the result? So the results are the consistent with Dr. Davidson's study. Results are the same. It means that, you know, the focusing profit first from the beginning is a great strategy for the startup. Wow, it's a problem solved. You know, the last dilemmatic situation, you know, the solved. What do you think? Is it helpful for you to understand and understand the dilemmatic situation and helpful for you to make a you know, critical decision in terms of these dilemmatic situations? Okay, this is the kind of power of the strategy. And I recommend you guys to think like a kind of a strategic person, okay, all the time.